And we've seen, Dave, legal obligation does not cement a marriage together. I mean, just because someone, after living for a period of time, I think generally here, if you're living common law for about a year or so, you're, you know, I mean, you're considered to be married in the eyes of the law.
Right.
But that doesn't cement a marriage, just because that's simply based on, well, you know, we have to split our assets up if we move. I own part of your house now. That's
exactly
that's not
right.
The kind of cement to put a, bring a marriage together.
Exactly
is it?
Right.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting that when we look even further to how that impacts children, because it's not just the couple, it's not just the mom and the dad there. It affects the children as well. In a married couple, young girls are less likely to experience an unwanted pregnancy. Young boys are less likely to be involved in gang behavior or violent behavior of any sort. In situations where there's a single mom with children, obviously a single mom has children, that has a boyfriend move into the house, the risk of the children being injured by the mom is minimal. It's the same as in my household or your household. But being injured by the live-in boyfriend, it's astronomical. In over 85% of cases, that's where the violence comes from. And we look back and we say, why is that so? And it seems to be so because the relationship is not there. In terms of commitment, if the couple were married, you know, if it was a second marriage or a single mom with a child, married a boyfriend and he comes into the house and adopts the children and he becomes the father figure there legally and in reality, that changes. Because suddenly there's a commitment. Suddenly they're my children. But if it's just a boyfriend floating in and out, the risk of if there's violence in the home, the risk is that it's going to be with the unmarried partner.
Dave, let me ask you about something else, because the Institute of Marriage and Family Canada appeared to back away somewhat on its strong lobby against same-sex marriage, and now has moved into more concerns about what's happening with polygamy in this country. And, of course, we have the case on British Columbia where the law is being challenged, and potentially right now polygamy is not allowed, as I understand it, by law out there, but potentially the law could be deemed unconstitutional. And that means, I guess, that it could be legal to have as many wives as you want to.
It's possible.
Your group is focusing on that a lot these days.
Well, let me back up to the first part of your statement. We're still very concerned with same-sex marriage. The issue there, there was one unfortunate headline about 2 or 3 years ago that made it look as if we were not involved or not concerned with same-sex marriage, and that simply isn't the case. It was erroneous reporting in that particular issue. However, same-sex marriage is legal in Canada, and so I do have to acknowledge that it's legal in Canada, and that is the law of the land. Given that the rate of same-sex marriage is actually very, very low, we've decided to focus most of our efforts on areas that are looking at marriage and cohabitation, but also other things that affect family, as you say, with something like polygamy that's coming up in the near future as well. It's already being debated in the courts in British Columbia. And it's not that we've given up on same-sex marriage. We do have grave concerns with that. I know there are many relationships that have lasted for many years, but unfortunately, the data is just simply not out there yet that shows that raising children in a same-sex marriage relationship is as well as it is in most heterosexual relationships. The data that has been researched so far has been very small and very self-selective, which does not make for bona fide studies at this point.
Now there's gray areas, I understand it, because some proponents are saying, look, if they rewrite the laws with respect to polygamy, as long as there are clauses that protect, for example, very young people, minors, that protect against violence against women, as long as these kinds of areas are covered, then what's wrong if a guy wants to live with more than one wife?
Well, probably living with more than one wife already occurs right now. There are stories coming out of Greater Toronto at this point that indicate that there are some Muslim families that are already doing that have come from different countries that have multiple wives that are there's one primary wife and the other wives are living on some form of welfare and social assistance programs and so on. When we open the social policy up on around issues like polygamy, we can't just say that, well, what's the impact on one person. We have to look at what's the impact on everybody. What's the impact on kids? What's the impact on the family unit itself? And we can't just say, well, if you want to go do that little thing over there, that doesn't affect me. It does affect us. There are implications of we've heard reports and studies around issue of violence, of abuse, and not all just physical abuse, but also abuse in the terms of absentee fathers. I mean, if I have four wives, I can't be a father equally in all those families' lives. It just simply doesn't work. And so suddenly we're actually looking at single-parent moms in many of those different cases. Nothing shows that this is in the best interest of the women and the children in particular. And I think that as this court case develops and shows its true colors, I think that's what we're going to actually be seeing with the research come out as well.
I suppose if we make it legal, then of course it opens up more pressure on our welfare system, our support system as well, because as you point out, in most cases, a father can't support, in essence, four or five different families. But if they would, of course, be able to rely on the social welfare system more so. But you raise an interesting point before, though. I mean, we are a socially inclusive society now. And if you have a particular group who believes in polygamy and have practiced it before and maybe religion, it might be based in their religion, how do you deal with that?
Well, I think what we need to look at is we need to ask the question, and this is coming back to, you know, whether the state should interfere or not. I think the role that the state can have is to say, is this in the best interest of our nation? And at this point, nothing's been shown to me or the court, for that matter, that says that this is in the best interest of our nation. When we're looking at spanking, we're limiting choice on different people, and somebody's going to come up and say, "Well, if you say that polygamy isn't legal, you're limiting choice for them." And I think what we have to say is that in the best interest of our nation as a whole? Is the best interest of the families, the communities that those people live in, and so on? And I would question if that is in our best interest, whether it's from a financial perspective, as we just talked about, in terms of how many members of a family can one man support, the implications on women and children, and actually the implications on young men as well. There are many reports of young men that are basically being ostracized out of communities like Bountiful in British Columbia because they are low in the pecking order and are not going to be able to have a wife at all. And so they leave and are ostracized out of their community to move somewhere else. So I think there are more negative implications here than any redeeming ones that we can look at.
Obviously, we're all watching with interest what's happening with the prostitution laws here in Ontario. We're still waiting, of course, for an appeal of the ruling by the justice, who in effect said that, you know, it's illegal, that our current laws are illegal, they're unconstitutional. First of all, how concerned are you that we could actually see a quantum change in the way we view prostitution in this province?
I'm quite concerned at this point. I think that the fact that the case was originally won by the appellants that brought forward the issue and said that the current laws are unconstitutional and that they won their case, I think that is of grave concern to all of us. I'm glad that the case is being appealed right now, that there is a stay in place right now until the federal government deals with this particular issue, and I hope it does so quickly. One of the things that concerns me is that one judge in one case can overturn the law of the land very quickly, and without, in many cases, without the lawmakers or par elected officials being able to address it, and whether they want to appeal it or whether they want to change the laws of the land or address a loophole that wasn't foreseen and things like that. Specific to prostitution here in Canada or within the province of Ontario, that will likely set a precedent, if it goes ahead, set a precedent for the rest of the country, and we can see challenges happening very quickly there. Nothing good can come out of this. The adage that the women are safer is I think a false front. The adage that they have the freedom of choice there to do that, I think, is a false front as well. We're looking at women that, by and large, are in abusive situations, that are facing drug and alcohol and physical abuse difficulties by usually men that are taking advantage of them. And whether we look at the pimps or whether we look at the Johns, both of them need to be prosecuted to the full extent of the law, and or laws need to be brought into place or brought up to date with the current situations right now. And without that change, if these changes and prostitution is made legal here in Ontario and consequently likely across the country, I think we're facing some dire consequences out of that. There was a case that came out of Germany where a woman was unemployed, went to whatever their version of employment assurance is, and was told, well, you could still be a prostitute because prostitution was legal in that particular area. And I mean, that just that without even talking about the moral ethical issues that go along with that, forcing somebody into prostitution because they could be that and it's legal in the land is just simply wrong.
But the theory, Dave, is if it was legal, the prostitutes could work as a normal business, a tax-paying business. They could, yes, they could open an establishment and carry on their business there. But it would, you know, they'd operate like any other business. They'd have all the protections of the law. And isn't it true right now anyway? I mean, we look at prostitution as pseudo-legal, don't we? I mean, with the police run them in and then let them go, and we play this silly game, and we have police devoting resources that could be used elsewhere to carry on this silly game that's been going on for decades and decades.
I think one way to look at it is to say what's happened in countries where it has been legal for some period of time, and Amsterdam is a good example. Amsterdam's very liberal with their both drug laws and prostitution laws, and it's quite simply that they are trying to reverse that. They've seen nothing good come out of that. They've seen that it's been an attraction for users of prostitutes to come into their city and use prostitution. It's attracted nothing positive. In fact, the mayor has said we'd like nothing better than to shut down the coffee houses, as they're called in Amsterdam, and begin closing down the red light district as well. That it attracts a seedier side of life that we don't want in our city. And I don't think that's of anything that we want. I mean, is there any girl that's 10 years old that when somebody asks them what they want to be when they grow up, well, I'd like to be a prostitute? That just doesn't ring true in any way, shape, or form at all. And I think we need to look at society as a whole when we're saying that we should legalize it and make it easier for women to get in and out of prostitution because it's safer and it's be drug free and they wouldn't have to put up with pimps. I think that we're looking at it through rose colored glasses if we honestly believe that.
And you don't buy into the notion that this is going to be—it's going to make it safer for the prostitute.
No, I don't. I don't. I think that it's still a criminal activity. It's still run by individuals that don't have women's best interest at heart, and for that instance, some men as well. I think that they have one motive, and that's to make money and at all costs. And it doesn't matter that that a woman is being used as chattel. They don't have that best interest at heart at all.
Dave Quist is our guest. Dave is the executive director of the Institute of Marriage and Family Canada. Dave, thanks for your time this morning.
My pleasure. All the best to you, Brian.
And to you. Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye-bye now.